from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 22nd day of December 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor, Illinois, and Pete Levitt will be here to take up the agricultural weather forecast. Along the way, we'll hear from Lisa Braltz as she sets up for the coming year and puts down some of her New Year's resolutions. And I'll tell you all about my favorite Christmas gift as we make our way through this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract and the soft red winter wheat finished 4¾ cents higher at $6.21¾. The May at 6:40 up 4¼, and July futures at 6:55¼ finished up 3 cents. The hard red in Kansas City, July contract at $6.89, up 2½ for the day. Back in the corn pit in Chicago, a penny gain at 6.17½ for the March. The May at 6.26¼, up 1. July corn a half cent higher at 6.32¼. September 5.91½, a penny and a quarter lower for the day. December futures down 4¼ at $5.66½. January beans $11.62¼, 8½ cents higher. The March contract at 11.71¾, up 8½. The May 11.82, 8¼ higher. July beans $11.91½, up 7¾. And November beans 11.78¼, up 2¾. January bean meal 60 cents lower, 2.98.40. The settlement price January soybean oil at 50.45, up $1 even. Live cattle futures finished the February at 123.45, up the $3 limit. January feeders at 146.87½, up $2.50. The March there at 149.65, up 2.80. Lean hogs at 84.55, up $1.27½. And the April at 87.95, up $1.45. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Please visit us online at WILLAG.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, February contract $99.40 a barrel, up 73 cents. Ethanol at 217¾, that's a penny and 6 cents higher. Natural gas at $3.16¾ up a penny and a tenth. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.90¼. That's down 0.7 cents. Gold futures for the afternoon at $1,608.90 a troy ounce, down $3. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up about 54 points at 12,161. And the dollar just below 80 at 79.96. That's down 0.05. The CRB index at 305.67, up 1.77 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon. Cloudy skies, a high of 42 degrees. Calm winds becoming north at 6 to 9 miles an hour. Winds could gust as high as 15. Tonight, cloudy. A low of 28 degrees. North-northwest winds between 9 and 11, gusting to 15. And Friday, mostly sunny. A high near 36 degrees with a north-northwest wind at 6 to 9 miles an hour. Friday night, mostly clear. A low of 24 west-southwest winds on Friday evening at 8 to 10 miles an hour. And then Saturday for Christmas Eve, sunny. A high of 41 southwest winds between 8 and 15. Saturday night, mostly clear. A low of 26. And on Christmas Day, sunny skies. A high of 41 degrees. Sunday night, mostly clear and 25. Monday, sunny and 43. Sunday night, or rather Monday night, partly cloudy and a low of 30. Tuesday, sunny and a high of 40. Tuesday night, cloudy and 28. And on Wednesday of next week, mostly sunny skies, a high near 40 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a Thursday afternoon. This is the closing market report. On the phone line with us to take up the agricultural futures markets is Matt Bennett with TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Thanks for taking the time this afternoon. What did you make of the marketplace, and what are your most often made calls today, and what are they asking from producers?
Well, as far as the marketplace today, I guess I figured after the exports came out this morning that, you know, they were both seen as, supportive. They're above last week's estimates, above what we need to reach our goal as far as the pace goes. And, you know, so we opened up a little bit higher. And, you know, crude oil is trading higher today, which was supportive. And, you know, I kind of felt like we might back off a little bit. A lot of it was going to depend upon weather forecasts out of South America. But, you know, I think the day kind of didn't surprise me a whole lot how we played it out. As far as questions I'm getting from farmers are, you know, is this a good time to be stepping in and starting to sell next fall's corn? You know, we've got a lot of guys that still got old corn still, but I don't think that at this stage of the game, this late in the year, unless they're doing it for tax reasons, guys are getting too excited about doing much.
When they ask you about next year's sales, what do you tell them?
Well, a lot of it depends upon if they've made any sales yet. A lot of it depends on if they've bought all their fertilizer yet. You know, I guess I don't see fertilizer costs going down a whole lot, especially with this recent rally. I think people, if they thought we were going to go ahead and move lower into the spring, one had to assume fertilizer prices would back off substantially at some point. But, you know, it doesn't appear that's going to be the case if we hold this market in here. So it's a pretty tough call. And guys that are apprehensive about it, I'd recommend if going ahead and making sales and then entering a limited risk scenario, something like a bull call strategy or just straight up buy and call option.
And so producers will turn their attention now to two different items. One of them would be the USDA report due out in January, and the other will be the average monthly price for corn and for soybeans as we make our way through February. Which of the two is more important to you?
Well, those are both very good things to be thinking about. There's no question. I think most of the trade is looking for a friendly report. In January, I got an email today from a friend who said, you know, I, as well as most of the people here on the trade floor, are looking for a supportive report in January, maybe a little more disappearance as far as the corn went, and, you know, export numbers not to be quite as abysmal as what we thought they might end up being. So, but, you know, when you look at the February report, one has to assume acreage implications are going to be largely affected by what our average prices are. And, if we would end up turning this market back up and getting closer to $6, maybe putting a six in front of it like we did this past year, then it would definitely encourage more acres just because of the revenue guarantee.
Anything out there on the horizon that tells you that should happen fundamentally?
Well, you know, technically today, in the last couple of days, we finally were able to break through some resistance, and we actually are at or above some of our trend lines. So, you know, as far as that goes, I think that a lot of people are looking at the market and maybe trying to enter it in some way. As far as fundamentally goes, I think a lot remains to be seen. Of course, the ethanol pace has been above what we've needed, but after the first year, that could all change. And we haven't seen maybe our ethanol guys stepping in and buying quite on the same pace that they have in the last few months. So I think a lot remains to be seen after the first year on, you know, how profitable they're going to be. So there's a lot up in the air yet.
You have your bids in front of you?
Yeah, cash corn today be 6:15, fall be 5:36, and then cash beans be 11:46, and then fall 12 would be 11:40.
Thanks for taking the time.
Yep, thank you, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with TGM. He is in Windsor, Illinois, joining us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. Dave Dickey will be here in just a moment with a look at today's agricultural news.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
In agricultural news, a new study says that U.S. commodity markets have shrunk almost 9% since MF Global's collapse as farmers, investors, and traders close out positions. The study provides the first evidence to show that smaller-scale traders who were MF Global's core customers may have been effectively frozen out of the markets. In the 6 weeks since the bankruptcy of the most active broker in U.S. commodity markets, traditional hedgers, including physical producers, consumers, and traders, have closed out positions in corn, crude, gold, and other markets, causing the number of open trades to shrink dramatically. By contrast, big hedge funds and speculators remain as deeply invested as before the collapse, although with positions that indicate they are much less bullish on prices. In the week ending November 29th, open interest, a measure of market size that represents the number of active futures and options contracts in circulation, fell below 10 million contracts for the first time since July of 2009. A drop of 1.3 million contracts in the 4 weeks following MF Global's collapse was the sharpest such reduction in positions since November of 2010. Across the Midwest, farmers are coping with the tightest market in over a decade for top-quality corn seeds after a heat blast this past summer damaged the more fragile seed crops. Seed firms like Monsanto and LG Seeds are turning to South America for extra supplies. Imports surged tenfold in October to the highest for that month in at least 13 years. Much of Monsanto's DeKalb seed is produced in Illinois and Iowa, where hot, dry weather hurt output last summer. And the supply shortage may be worse than leading suppliers Monsanto or Pioneer have acknowledged. That, according to a recent survey of about 35 seed dealers conducted by an equity research and trading firm in New York. Brazil's largest soy-producing state is days away from a record harvest of corn and soy crops. The state's Farm Economics Institute expects Mato Grosso to yield record harvests in corn, soybeans, and cotton. Soybean production should reach 22.2 million tons in the state. That's up from last year's record 20.5 million tons due to increased planted area. If confirmed, the state would account for roughly 30% of the 75 million ton soy output expected for all of Brazil. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community-owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. More information is on their website at www.commonground.coop.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, as the calendar counts down the final days of 2011, Lisa Brooks has already been putting together her official In My Backyard resolution list for 2012.
I tell people all the time that my tolerance for winter weather shenanigans has a pretty narrow window, and with New Year fast approaching, that window is starting to close. Okay, I mean, it is winter, but you wouldn't know it being outside. The winter solstice happened for East Central Illinois at about 11:30 p.m. last night, so it's official. But someone should really let the weather know. We're smack in the middle of the winter holiday season, and we still haven't had any measurable snowfall. The grass is still green, it's been raining, and several friends and neighbors report they're still getting food out of their gardens. Just a few days ago, I pulled some forgotten carrots out of their bed and snipped the last of the kale. The herbs closest to the house, like sage and even parsley, are still producing new leaves that are harvestable. So let's face it, even though we're in the middle of Hanukkah and Christmas hasn't even happened yet, I have not so secretly moved right past the winter holidays, and I'm thinking about 2012. I'm thinking about next year's garden, next year's food projects, and next year's episodes of In My Backyard. I'm making resolutions left and right. Part of this satisfying rush of promises is certainly being fueled by the fact that the lack of snow has made it painfully obvious that I was a lousy steward of my garden environment at the end of the 2011 season. My failure to put the garden to bed is readily apparent to anyone who looks back there, including our long-suffering neighbors. Sorry, guys. So, without further ado, here are In My Backyard's official resolutions for 2012, even though one of them is for 2011. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I will refrain from looking until January 1st, 2012, at the various and sundry seed catalogs that have arrived in the mail over the last several weeks. Back in the olden times, like 5 years ago, seed catalogs never arrived until after the winter holidays. It's been hard, but I'm currently keeping to this resolution. Just 9 more days to go. I will also read the excellent books I already own but have not yet gotten to about interesting food-related endeavors and voyages, and not only that, I'll share these books with you guys. At the top of the current pile is writer Stephen Wren's Tales from the Sustainable Underground, which, not coincidentally, features a few folks from Urbana. I resolve to work with my neighbors to ensure the third, or is it the fourth, annual seed swap that our neighborhood puts on happens on schedule in early February. Bonus points will be given if another Snowmageddon is bearing down on us the day we choose to hold the event. In addition, I will continue to start plenty of seeds indoors for planting in my own garden, but also for sharing with neighbors and donating to local plant sales. However, I resolve to refrain from starting 20 different kinds of tomatoes. I don't have that kind of room. I resolve to plant more perennial food in my own garden, as it is clear I need at least some of my food to work for me instead of the other way around. Basically, I resolve not to bite off more than I can chew, so to speak, and I resolve to be patient and diligent while coaxing my food to work for me. Further, I will engage my neighbor, Sam the Wine Punk, in helping me espalier the 2 heirloom apple trees growing against our garage, thus relieving my neighbors of the burden of wondering just what I'm planning to do with these trees and when I'm planning to do it. I will plant more flowers, especially orange ones, and keep the bird feeders full, even though most of the birds I'm feeding seem to be incredibly chubby and rather unappreciative sparrows. And what about all that food when it grows? Well, I resolve to harvest it and do my best to preserve what we don't eat. That seems easy enough, and it is, but it's also something I got away from in 2011. Well, it's probably more accurate to say it got away from me. And finally, I resolve to bring listeners lots of quirky stories about seed orders, seed swapping, seed starting, plant trading, perennial planting, tree espaliering, bird feeding, food eating, harvest preserving, and much more in 2012. No, not my stories necessarily, but those of the many people living here that do that little something extra to live a little closer to whatever bits of earth they may have at their disposal, whether those bits of earth are big backyards or community garden plots or containers on windowsills. In My Backyard will go dormant for the month of January, just like the gardens. A couple of archived episodes will air during the month, and then it'll be back with all new content, more photos, more blogging, and more everything in February. Thank you so much for listening this year. Let's look forward to starting a new page on the calendar, rolling up our sleeves, and getting our hands dirty. This is Lisa Braltz for In My Backyard.
It's a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in a moment, my Christmas list.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
What I won from Santa this year is a toy tractor. Well, Santa actually already brought it to me. He made it himself. It's a Meadow Green Oliver, 1955. Trimmed in clover white with orange and black to set it off. And this little toy tractor is the first model he's ever made with a radio mounted right there on the fender. It's just like the one I clung to as a little boy when Dad and I went to the field. My Santa is Joe Ertl of Dyersville, Iowa. For 50 years, the company his dad founded has made the dreams of little and big farm boys come true.
Now I'm only 5 years old. I've got to do just what I'm told, 'cause Santa Claus is gonna be dropping in on me.
Max Armstrong, farm broadcaster, WGN U.S. Farm Report, Chicago. Every kid loves a tractor. There's no doubt in my mind, boys love tractors. And as we get a little bit older, some of us who grew up on those tractors think back to those days. I mean, when I look at my Farmall Super M or the Super H, I think about days of sitting in that tractor, bringing in a load of corn when I was a little boy, and coming in on a chilly October night with that moon coming up over the corn stalks. Or I think about cultivating corn down to the Wabash Bottoms. I was on one tractor and Dad was on another. You know, there's just something very, very special, especially if it's a tractor that Dad had. You know, there's an emotion that gets wrapped up in that.
It is an emotion that Max Armstrong knows all too well, and one that has made Joseph Ertl's toy tractors worth a lot of money. At this auction in November, to benefit scholarships for future farm broadcasters, Max spent $300 on a 1/8-inch scale Farmall MD. It's special for many reasons.
That's an M diesel, and this one is special because it's a 50th anniversary tractor. On the frame of that tractor are raised letters pointing out that it's the 50th year of toy making for Joseph Ertl, the legendary toy maker who owns Scale Model Toys.
Would you like me to put anything up here on the your name or anything?
Joe Ertl is a celebrity in his own right, and for years his autograph has been sought after. Like Santa, he gives it freely.
Can you write, thanks for support of farm broadcasting?
I'll date it there for you, too. And
you've done this before.
Yeah, a few thousand times.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
your
help.
You're welcome. Thank you for supporting.
Well, it started way back in 1945 when my father was on strike at a local foundry. And he started making castings in his basement. And one day he made a farm toy, and I was 10 years old at the time. And at that time, the toy tractor sold so well, he never went back to his job again. And of course, I grew up with the business. And then when I was in my senior year of high school, I started taking drafting courses. And we went from sand casting to die casting. And we had to have drawings, so I started making the drawings for the toys, and I've been designing them ever since.
Today, Joe Ertl's company is called Scale Models, and he still loves to design and make toy tractors, in large part, he says, because the farm community has welcomed him into its vast family called agriculture.
It's been a pleasure for me to work my whole life here in the designing of these toys, which have made so many people happy. You know, the farmers have really been great to our family, and I can't think of anything more wholesome than little toy tractor and to be a pretend a farmer. It's so much better than some of these toys I've seen made over the year, and it's been a pleasure for me to be associated with the farmers and the farming industry and everything. It's just been a wonderful life.
That's a Christmas present from a very dear friend of mine.
If you're lucky, what you'll find under your Christmas tree this year is a toy tractor made by Joseph Ertl in Dyersville, Iowa. That's what's on the top of my list. Well, by the way, thanks in advance, Santa. Your friend, Todd Gleason at the University of Illinois.
But could there be something I might have missed? I had quite a few things on my list. I hope he can fit it all under that Christmas tree. Hope he can fit it all under my Christmas tree. Let's see, I know he's gonna fit the airplane under there. He can get that bicycle in there and the gumball machine. And I don't know what he's gonna do with that horse.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's National Date Nut Bread Day. It's also the winter solstice, shortest day of the year. On this day in agricultural history in 1882, Edward Johnson, an associate of Thomas Edison, strung his Christmas tree with electric lights, the first time that's happened in history. Christmas tree lights quickly became all the rage among wealthy Americans, and they flocked to snap up those made by the Edison General Electric Company. Those early lights came in strings of 9 sockets, each with a miniature 2-candle-power 32-volt carbon filament lamp. In 1884, John Simpson Chisholm died, an American cattle rancher. In 1867, he blazed the Chisholm Trail from San Antonio, Texas to Abilene, Kansas. Cattle drives up the trail often took up to 2 months, and there were risks from rustlers, conflicts with Native Americans, to the difficulties in crossing the Arkansas and Red Rivers. Chisholm developed the largest cattle herd in the United States. And in 1943, Beatrix Potter died, an English author of children's books. Her first was the most famous, perhaps, The Tale of Peter Rabbit, originally written as an illustrated letter to a sick child. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This is the closing market report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Levitt is with us to take up what's been happening in the growing areas around the planet. Pete, thanks so much for taking the time. The shortest day of the year has come and gone yesterday, and now we're on the upside. As I look outside and the temperature, it's still 39 degrees on December the 22nd here in Champaign-Urbana. It's kind of a nice warm day.
Yeah, it's going to be a warm or a milder than normal week. I wouldn't say necessarily warm through the balance of the week, but we have a week of front has moved through in terms of temperature departures, and we're going to see the temperatures hanging in there anywhere from 4 to 8 degrees above normal across most of northern, central, and southwestern Illinois and into Iowa. It'll even be a little bit warmer than that. So above normal temperatures, precipitation is going to be absent most of the period. We have a little here at the beginning of the period, mostly going to move off to the east through eastern Illinois and Indiana, and then it'll be heavier down in the southeast corner of the Midwestern crop regions. But that's a period now when most activity is pretty idle. The most important weather in the U.S. for growing in the hard winter wheat belt. There, we've got some cold weather to start off the week, but we're going to see a drier week move across most of that region, and moisture now is pretty well normalized in most areas in central and eastern parts of the hard red winter belt, but western portions, and especially southwestern portions, they did get relief from the terrible summer drought, but not enough really to get things back to a normal soil moisture profile, and we're going to go into a dry pattern there.
On the subject of a lack of rainfall, have you been watching the development of the dry weather conditions in Argentina and parts of southern Brazil?
Yeah, these are the most important areas. So they did get some good rain across the northern growing areas of southern Brazil, and that's going to have an interesting effect of offsetting some of the drought conditions we see developing northward from Argentina and southern Brazil. Soybean crop will move along up north. They'll get it harvested early. Harvested's already begun up there. And they'll probably try to get a safrinha crop, another corn crop in. The early crop has come along, and so they'll get a winter crop up there to offset the crispy-looking corn crop, as it's being described in the southern portions of Brazil. And then in the Argentine, it's hot and dry, and it's going to stay that way, I think, all through this week. So With still some quarter of the crop left to plant, even in parts of eastern Argentina, I think they're going to be in for a tough draw, even though they try to get in a lot of acreage because of prices. They're not going to get the weather to bail them out. Not as bad as last year or this past season, but it doesn't look very good for the Argentine. Brazil, southern Brazil, looks tough. Northeastern Brazil and the area down through central Brazil looks like abundant moisture. And as I said, in the corn areas, may bail out a few of those short crops down south.
Pete, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
My pleasure.
Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.